Accession number 28645, rule 19.
Suzanne, you were steering the ship and...
That's right. And every time there was a really tough bit of steering to be done with currents and things to deal with, the captain would make me take over, see how I managed. And going past the Comores, we had a little bit of difficult steering to do. Anyway, we came to Cape God of Free. So the captain said, this is a nice bit for you to do, get around the Cape. And I've never felt anything like it. There was 10,000 tons of ship absolutely intent on sliding sideways onto Cape God of Free. And I had to keep it from doing it. The currents are absolutely horrible, and he was steering within a mile or two of the Cape. I mean, he was a crazy captain. If there was something dangerous to do, he did it. However, I managed to fight the ship round Cape Cod of Greece. I was rather pleased with myself. And then we were coming up the Red Sea. Now, there's a safe side of the Red Sea, which is the east, and there's an unsafe side of the Red Sea, which is to the west. There are lots of rocks to the west, and it's not very safe, and there are lighthouses and things. So what does our captain do? He says, we'll go up the east coast, the west side. You can steer, he said. So I was loaded with taking this ship up the rocks, and at the same time trying, straining our eyes we were for a very important lighthouse, which would tell us that we were all right, and instead of being not all right, and until we saw it, we were not all right. Might go into rocks any moment. At the same time, a sandstorm blew up. So it was really dicey, and I was the first person to see the lighthouse. I'm very pleased I was to see it. Howdy, we arrived safely in Suez, goodness knows how. And that was the end of that journey. And then this girl, Margaret, she was great fun. She came and stayed with us for a while and kept us happy.
Now this was Margaret who you met on the boat again?
No, this was another Margaret. Another Margaret. I go in for Margaret.
Margaret too.
I've known a lot of Margarets.
Have you?
Hmm. All been nice except one. Yes, it's a name I've met very often. And so we got back safely.
And you settled down to married life?
Yes, and life after the war, which returned for a little while to normal, pretty well to normal, before the troubles started.
Now, before we come to the troubles, is there anything that you'd like to say about the period between, I suppose it's about 46, really, to...
Yes, 40...
To
46 to 52.
52-ish.
No, 52 it was over. 50, end of 51. It was blowing up in 51.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to say about that period?
Well, we returned fairly well to normal, and we gave our big ball once a year. So we gave two between the troubles, between the war and the troubles. And we had a wonderful house, and a large ballroom, and a wonderful entry, and all the flowers I could possibly want for decoration. Had the whole of the inside of the ballroom done with trellis work and bougainvillea. It was about, must have been a good 10 feet, 11 feet tall, the wall. And they cut down two apricot trees in full flower. Put them on the dais. Had a wonderful band. And I had hundreds of cinerarias piled on the staircase. It was a lovely sight, absolutely lovely. And the last one we gave, we'd been down the Red Sea, oh, that's another story. We got arrested in the Red Sea. The last ball we gave, it came to be known as the fish ball. And everybody was supposed to dress in something that was marine. And we had enormous plate glass windows, huge. They were as big as the centre of those three centres there. And they were all around the reception room. So there was a big reception room as well as the ballroom. And all around the sitting rooms and the dining room, these huge windows. And we'd been down the Red Sea and we'd seen all these fish. So my husband drew the fish and I painted them. And we did corals and all sorts of things, and we stuck them on the windows so that all the windows looked like as if they were full of fish swimming about. It was a lovely sight. It's a lot of work. And then everybody came with something marine on, and it became very famous. It became known as the fish ball throughout Egypt. So that was the last one. After that, the troubles broke out. Things began to hot up.
Was there, now you had determined, I think yourself, that you didn't want to have any children. I think you had...
Yes, no, I wasn't keen.
You secretly determined that?
Well, at the beginning, yes. There was a time when I thought I might like to. But anyhow, I didn't, and that was that.
Did it remain a conscious decision, or not?
No, it just happened. No, there was a time when I changed my mind, but it didn't happen. So, after that, of course, we ran into the troubles. And that is where I did play a big part in Secret Service and getting messages to the army and so on.
Tell me how they started, what the background to it was.
Well, it blew up pretty suddenly. There were all sorts of indications that there was restless feelings, and I was going home one night through the gardens with a couple of officers after a reception. We were attacked by three men with these long staves, and so the two South Africans started fighting them, or they were trying to beat them, and there were various people going home from this reception, army people, Air Force. So I ran up to a group of them and said, please come and help. They wouldn't, didn't stir a finger. So I ran back because it was quite an exciting fight, come to think of it. And besides, I didn't want to desert them, so I went back. I suppose that was very foolish, but there you are. I've never seen a better fight. It was terrific. The two South African lads, they didn't have anything, and these men had staves. And they beat them into the ground. It was a very exciting fight. So, having beaten them, they dusted themselves down and took me home. But things were happening. There were mini riots. It's very difficult to remember exactly when it started. I know when it started properly, bona fide, the beginning of it, but there were incidents and there was seething and so on and so forth, and semi-riots in Cairo and unrest and so on and so forth. And then one, we were getting worried. And then one morning, about 6 o'clock, they started shooting. Our house was built on a triangle of ground between two large avenues, which ran down, one from the station, one from the French Square. And they met, and there was a bridge across the canal, the Sweet Water Canal, where these two avenues met, and the big road along the canal. And we'd had one incident before. We'd had somebody wheeling a barrel of oranges, and it blew up on the bridge. By that time, there'd been a directive from our dear government in England forbidding Army, Air Force or Navy to leave camp. So they were enclosed in the camp. So when they needed anything, they let me know. So I got it and traipsed it up to camp, again at the risk of my life.
You got what?
Well, they ran out of sheets. And so they got me to... Nylon had just come in. Very pretty it was, too. It had just come in. There were lots of rolls of it in town. And so I bought up the whole stock and took it up to the camp for them to make sheets out of. Christmas came. And they hadn't any toys or decorations, so I took a load or two of those up for the children and for decoration. Anything they needed and couldn't get. And then one family was moving house and they needed help, so I went up and helped them move house. Anything that came my way, and it was all contraband, of course. And there were two roads up to the camp, to the army camp, which was the one I supplied most. And they were regularly ambushed by the Egyptians. So you just tossed a coin and you hoped for the best, you didn't take the ambushed road.
Now, who was the government of the day in Egypt at this time? Was it in theory Egyptian or basically still...
No, it was Egyptian.
It was Egyptian?
Oh, yeah.
So, what type of Egyptian, to whom do they owe allegiance, the Egyptians who are attacking the British?
Well, to Egypt.
So, my question then is that these attacks on British forces were carried out with...
Because we weren't there as an official occupational force anymore.
But these attacks were carried out with the... cognizance and almost agreement of the Egyptian government. Would that be right?
Well, I wouldn't know. I presume so. I mean, they didn't bother to stop them. There was unrest in the town as well.
Which town?
Arab town. Because there was a whole section of Ismailia which was an Arab town, and then there was the French town. There were two halves. Anyway, there was general unrest. And the soldiers, there were a few soldiers allowed in town on the far side of the Sweetwater Canal because there was an army club down there on the lake. So they kept a few soldiers there guarding the army club. So there were general pot shots, as you might say, across the canal every now and again. Anyhow, we had the bomb. That was a most amazing sight because we were sitting in front of one of our biggest windows, which faced out over the garden to the bridge. And it was plate glass, and there were about 10 of us having coffee after lunch. This bomb went off. I've never seen anything like it. The window bent in. And didn't break. It bent in on a curve. Must have been very good glass. So after that, we didn't take coffee at that window anymore. Then there was the bomb, which I missed by 30 seconds. We had the servants' quarters at the back of the house, and it ran, and they ran along this one of the avenues, the one to the station. And I used to go out every evening to give orders to the cook for the next day. And there was a table I sat at, which was opposite the window. And the kitchen was half underground. So the bottom of the windows was level with the street, with the pavement. And so I gave him his orders. In the corner, the wall began again on the side of the window, and in that nook, as it were, was the washing up sink. So I finished giving him the orders. I turned round and went to the back door, to the kitchen door, to go into the house. He went across to the sink to start washing up. I just got through the door. He just got to the sink, and the bomb went off. Blew all the windows out. So we were lucky.
Was that deliberately aimed at you?
Oh, yes, yes. So that was that. Then our Egyptian friend came to stay. They are a very surprising people.
The Egyptians?
Arabs. They never cease to astonish me. They become fanatics. They kill. They like killing. They murder you for a handful of piastres. But if once they are your friend and give you their friendship, they will die for you. And we had a friend who was an officer in the Egyptian army. And during these troubles, he decided he was coming to see us, and he came to see us. He came on an old Egyptian bus. He came on a British bus. He submitted to being searched on the way from Cairo. He did everything necessary, everything humiliating, and he just barged on, and he came and he stayed. And he came to see us. And he had absolutely no fear whatsoever when we were having an exchange on the big day of trouble, and the soldiers on the other side of the canal were shooting at the Egyptians. The Egyptians were lined up on the road behind our house and shooting round the corner at the officers. He walked calmly out into the street to have a look and see what was happening. He was an extraordinary character, most extraordinary, and absolutely dead faithful to us. Extraordinary. They like that. Anyway, so we had the bomb, and then one morning at 6 o'clock in the morning they started shooting. So I leapt out of bed. Oh, I'd already had a bullet through a bathroom when I was having a bath, that's right. I've still got it. It was one of those dum-dum things that goes flat. Got it on a key ring. Missed me. So I got up, and the shooting was going on. And of course, the English soldiers on the other side of the canal were very nervous of shooting these people at the back of our house because they were afraid of shooting us. We were protecting them. So anyway, I decided to ring the camp and say we're being attacked. So I rang up. I got the aide-de-camp, and he said the general's asleep. So I said, well, if he doesn't do something fairly soon, we're going to have a massacre in Ismailia. We're heading straight for it. Oh, well, I'll tell him when he wakes. So I waited about another 3/4 of an hour, and then news came through from the convent, which was on the other side of the avenue, that they'd shot one of the nuns. And she happened, bless her heart, to be an Irish nun from Northern Ireland. I thought, now we've got them. So I rang up the general again. And he said, oh, well, he couldn't come and speak to me. I said, he'd better, because we're having nuns killed. That roused them. So I got hold of the general and I told him the situation. And he said, well, we've got a directive from Downing Street that we're not to leave camp. So I said, right, don't leave camp and have several hundred deaths on your hand, on your head. So he said, right. This was General Erskine, bless his heart. He said, right, I'll come. As soon as I can get the tanks ready, I'll come. And he did. And we, absolutely crazy, this Egyptian, myself, and my servant as well, we all went out into the road to wave to them, with bullets flying everywhere. Absolutely mad, the things you do. And they couldn't even see us because they had their lids down. So they rolled into town and took up position opposite the police station. Incidentally, the policeman had been cooperating with the riffraff and shooting. And they bombarded the police station. Meanwhile, we had reporters in and out the whole time. I don't know how much whiskey they drank at our expense. Every time they wanted a rest from reporting, they'd come to our house because it was right on the spot. Anyhow, the bombardment over, there was an eerie silence, and they went in and they killed 70 policemen. But they also found in the police station the list of all the Europeans in Suez, and all the Europeans in Ismailia, and all the Europeans in Port Said, listed in alphabetical order, or in order of importance, and when they were to be shot. They were going to massacre the lot. We just caught it in time. That's why I saved hundreds of lives. Because without being bullied, they'd never have come into town. Should have been another General Gordon type collapse. Should have been dreadful.
When did you come to the decision that you had to leave?
Leave?
Yes. You left Egypt in 1952.
We all left.
So when did
my husband retired?
Oh, you didn't leave because of the troubles?
No, indeed not. He was due to retire. And
how old would Louis have been in 1952, roughly?
He was born in 1880. Oh, wait a minute. He was 6 months younger than my mother, 1880. 1883, I think he was born.
Okay.
No, we were tidying up the house, we were packing up. And I left to join my mother in April in Spain for Easter. Having done my share of the packing up, and then Louis left just after me with the family.
In Easter 52?
Yes. No, 50. Yes. 52, that's right. Moving up towards the troubles, we had all sorts of things happening. I mean, one night, there was a knocking at the door at about midnight. And we went down and opened it up. And the priest slipped in. And he said, I've just had one of my flock who's been to see me and has told me where the Egyptians are storing their weapons. He said, they've got an enormous store. Their favorite place was in the graveyards because an Egyptian graveyard. They build a sort of roofless house, and all the family gets buried inside. And it has no roof, but it has walls, no windows. And some of these are quite big when it's a big family. And they got one of these things absolutely full up to the top of the walls. And so that was one of the times when I had to get up to the camp and see the colonel. I didn't dare telephone. Nobody dared to telephone this information. And so I had to take it out. It was things like that. There was a lot of information that came through that had to be got up to the camp. That's why I say I...
And you were the courier?
Yeah. That's why I say I preferred it to be a military medal rather than an arts medal. Anyhow, it's hardly a medal anyway, MBE. So it's not worth thinking about. It's come much too late for it to be any good to me.
How would it have been of use to you if you had...
Well, it's there? Always nice if you're president of several societies and you've founded things and you're working for them and putting your whole life into them. It's quite nice to have a decoration. It affects people. It shouldn't, but it does. Opens doors. But it's when they gave it to me, it was useless to me. Lord Lieutenant still got it. I can't ask him to come to this mess to present it to me. I mean, it's ridiculous anyway. They can put it on me when they put the coffin in the ground. Pin it on me. I always said I'd get it when I was dying. I was right. I said that years ago.